Well, happy St. Patrick's Day, to you. Thank you guys for making us part of your Montana Day here. We're going to celebrate a little bit, but this show is going to go back to Helena, Montana, the Made in Montana trade show. We did a live thing there, talked to a lot of businesses, and just had a few minutes with them, and it was really good. A lot of courageous and brave entrepreneurs in this beautiful state of Montana. We're going to have a little redo here with some businesses that I ran into. Again, that trade show is just, there was 116 different businesses there, and all of them had some kind of Montana story, some Made Montana story. So we're going to share those a little bit here today. Deb Wheaton from Gluten Free Prairie, Weston Allen from Blue Wing Woodcraft, and Gary Johnson, who runs the orchard at Flathead Lake. We're going to hear from them today about their Made in Montana businesses. Yeah, we're going to go back to the Made in Montana program here and talk to some folks who, they pour themselves and their families and really their fortunes into their Made in Montana products as well. And so I just very much appreciate that entrepreneurial spirit in Montana. I kind of like the spirit of the tavern every now and again too, but that entrepreneurial spirit in Montana is just so... it just shines. It really does for a lot of people. Deb Wheaton, I had a chance to catch up with her. She's with Gluten Free Prairie. And I'll just have her tell a story here as well. Some of the things that we talk about is that journey, right? How you get the genesis of the idea, how you get over maybe some walls or some obstacles. And then what have you got in terms of advice for other Montanans as well? It's really, really educational and really, like one-on-one, kind of down-to-earth, get-to-work, salt-of-the-earth kind of people as well. So Gluten Free Prairie, it's glutenfreeprairie.com, and they're based in Manhattan, Montana. And this is Deb Wheaton, who, along with her husband Rick, run the place and own the place, and they've got a number of employees. It was Jeff and Melissa, who will be mentioned here as well, who came up and were teasing Deb, and they were saying, hey, you got to go over and talk to Deb because she likes to talk. And she was also, the 2025, I think, not retailer of the year, but best of show for the Made in Montana trade show. Anyway, let's hear about this story, Gluten Free Prairie. Here is Deb Wheaton, Made in Montana, she is.
Gluten Free Prairie is a family owned and operated certified gluten free bakery in Manhattan, Montana. We manufacture everything in our bakery in our 118-year-old historic building right in Main Street in Manhattan.
118 years old?
It is. Yeah, if those walls could talk.
How long have you been in there?
We renovated the building starting in about 2010.
Okay.
And then we opened officially like around 2014, had a huge flood in Manhattan, recovered from that, got our feet under us at about 2016. And man, never look back.
Tell us about that journey again. I mean, from the genesis of the idea to, sort of that first shovel, kind of, so to speak, in the ground, and then to where you are nowadays.
Yeah. So I kept driving by this building, and we did not have Gluten Free Prairie at the time. I kept driving by this building in foreclosure on Main Street, and I just kept thinking, man, that would be a great bakery. But it was such a dream back then that it was just, couldn't imagine it fully formed, right? One day I woke up with the name Gluten Free Prairie just in my brain, you know how you do sometimes? And I thought, man, I got to talk to the family. I got the family together. And just kind of did my best, Shark Tank pitch to the family.
Yeah.
They agreed. We bought the building. We started renovating the building. We started with our Hunger Buster cookie. That's the oatmeal, peanut butter, chocolate chip, and raisin cookie. And that kind of took off pretty quickly. And then it was just what I was missing. I have celiac disease. So what was I missing as a gluten-free consumer that was really good? And since I met the farmers growing the oats, I knew the quality of the oats, so I knew that I could build on the line. And now we have, I think we have 15 products.
How did you decide that gluten-free products were going to be successful?
I am my customer. I knew what I was missing. When my daughter and I were diagnosed in 2005, it was difficult to navigate that road, changing your lifestyle. I've always been a baker, always been a cook, And then I started trying some of the mainstream manufactured gluten-free products, and they were horrible. And I, my son, who's not gluten-free, I'd bring him home like, try this. It's a, like a gluten-free brownie. And he said, no, Mom, it's a doorstop. So the brownie was born. And now we have a brownie mix. We have the brownie bites, two of our best sellers. So I am the customer. I made them for me. And I knew the quality that I demanded as a gluten-free consumer. And I respect that my customers demand that same quality. And you know what? We've been able to do it.
What was it then like when I say, you know, put the shovel in the ground?
Yeah.
That's kind of like getting all the gears going and oiled up and working. What was the process to get to there?
This is incredible. Really an incredible story, and I love telling it. So I heard about Growth Through Agriculture for the grants, and Angie DeYoung, who is with the Department of Commerce, she actually called us. This is unbelievable. She said, I want to help you grow your business. She meant it. We applied for the grant. We got the largest grant that they do. It's a matching grant. My son, who is an engineer, and it thinks like it, but he's actually IT, but he thinks like an engineer. Mm-hmm. He knew what we needed. So we part of that grant went for the same oven that Costco has, so we could scale. You know, for their bakery goods, they have this giant, and now we use every inch of that. He had the idea for our 140-quart Hobart mixer, which I could fit inside. It's so big. But, I mean, things like that, the cookie wrappers, the things that have... So because of Growth Through Agriculture, we were able to scale up and compete with the big guys. That's tough to do. I don't remember what the percentage is of that small businesses fail, but I think that we've kind of got our feet under us. And I always say this, you know, Montana is the last best place to start a small business. We are living proof of that.
The next part of that journey is the whole, okay, I'm making this stuff. How do I sell it? The whole marketing angle mm-hmm. of things. You being a gluten-free consumer, you probably had some ideas about where this should be and where that should be. But talk about that process, because I think, again, if we're bragging on the Commerce Department, they have help in that regard, too, about mm-hmm. about marketing with different programs.
They do. Yeah. It's called Prospera, and it's and that is also incredible for helping just with all of the kind of marketing classes that they have. But what happened there, one day I got a call from a local Montana distributor, Quality Foods Distributing, and they are in Four Corners down below us. And they had heard about Gluten-Free Prairie and wanted to know if we'd be interested in that they could distribute our. And that's when you walked over to my booth and I was looking through that. That's my sales report. That is 12 pages back to back of all the stores that carry us in Montana through Quality Foods Distributing.
That's really exciting. I mean, 12 is a good number, right? But I know you want to grow that number. You probably mm-hmm. want to double that number, I'm sure. What's the process for that like that?
Yeah, so we do have a store on Amazon. We call it The Beast. It's not easy for a small business to maintain a presence on Amazon. We've been very blessed with that. Because what happens, and then we're talking kind of retail right now, mm-hmm. is that people will find our products in the parks. And the parks are like our outside sales force. Mm. And then they will look for us on Amazon because they have found it in the parks.
Yes.
The same thing like Glacier National Park. We are the top of the Going to the Sun Road. They have four boxes of our Hunger Busters going at a time. Then I'll get calls from people, whether they're looking on Amazon or they call me directly and say, I just had your Hunger Buster cookie in Glacier. Where can I get more? Then they can buy from us. So we have all kinds of like venues. We're on fair.com, which is a wholesale portal for smaller businesses. So like Costco, we're not in Costco right now, mm-hmm. but they have talked to us. But they will order a pallet at a time. But for Fair, they work with smaller retailers. So they aren't like out in the cold when they want to order a case or two of our products. So we've got all those venues of distribution. And we have decided to grow organically. Because you can reach out and go huge, right, to the mm-hmm. large chains. Or that's the way that small businesses kind of get gobbled up. And so we decided to just grow organically. Word of mouth. You know, and that just today at the show, I've already had so many customers come back that stores that year after year they order from us. So
that's really good.
It touches my heart.
Well, yeah, and that's you know, I've made it. That's the signal that you know, you're a thriving business, so to speak. Yeah,
yeah. I'm offering samples of almost everything we make, but I don't have to do the hard sell. Of course, I love it. You can tell. Mm-hmm. But I don't have to do that now because people, and they'll bring other people over.
Boy, what's that secret then? Go ahead and drink that.
Yeah.
What is that secret, Debbie? Because there's a lot of people here who would like to get to that point, too.
Mm-hmm.
What do you tell them? What do you tell entrepreneurs that are looking at your business? Boy, Debbie, in 10 years, I want to be where you are or even beyond. How do I get there?
Well, the first thing I will say is you can't fake authenticity. If you love it, you have to love the work more than love. You really have to love it and have the passion for it more than you hate all the hard work that's just going to, like, kind of have you exhausted, right? The passion, I think, fuels our us, and you met my crew. They all feel that same way. If you have that idea, and then you go all in on that idea, and you stay authentic and true to that, and then you kind of grow. And that's what I mean about growing organically.
Mm-hmm.
People have an idea, and they think, oh, I'm going to take it nationwide. Well, then be prepared. But if you grow organically and stay authentic to the quality of your product and to everything else, I believe the universe will conspire to make your dream come true.
I want to ask this question about, again, it goes back to the journey and the struggle and the challenge. I think almost everybody bumps into a wall, and it might be the most discouraging wall you've ever seen, and you think, my business, this is where it ends. I don't know if you had that, but what was an obstacle? What was one of the challenges where you had to reach down to get through, and where did you reach?
Okay, I got to be honest with you. I've never been there. But obstacles, absolutely. If you are an entrepreneur, you want to start a small business, there's going to be an obstacle every time you turn around. And you just figure out what's the way around that. Because if you let the obstacles get you down, don't start a small business, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
You got to hear no. You got to hear no a lot. And you got to, that's what I said about being passionate about the product and being authentic to whatever it is. Then no's not an option.
That's Deb Wheaton, once again, at Gluten Free Prairie. One of the things I love about Made in Montana businesses is that they're made by Made in Montana people as well. And you can tell that certainly comes through for Gluten Free Prairie. Gluten, G-L-U-T-E-N, freeprairie.com for more information. And what we're doing today is a little redo of the Made in Montana Trade Show. It was a really good show, great hour there. Talked with a lot of folks in the Montana Department of Commerce and a gal named Serena Grunhauser as well, who started her own K&K Metalworks, woman-owned fabrication business. She had a great story to tell. That podcast is up on voicesofmontana.com, so we encourage you to check that out. Just heard from Deborah Wheaton as well, Deb Wheaton from Gluten Free Montana. 46% of Montana businesses are women-owned, right? And these are brave women. These are strong women as well, and I celebrate them all. But we're going to move on here a little bit as we've got Weston Allen up next. He was just near our booth there at the Made in Montana Trade Show on Friday. Blue Wing Woodcraft, okay? That's more of a business-to-business, B2B, as he says. They start out with a lot of retail, and then they start to work in distributorships. And that's the big thing that happens on Friday. The retail day for a lot of people is Saturday. BlueWingCraft.com for a look at some of his wares. He is a craftsman. Here is Weston Allen on his business.
Our business, we started it in 2021. We are a manufacturer of wood products for the gift and souvenir industry. We started by doing craft fairs and Christmas shows, things of that nature, with the goal to move into wholesale within a couple of years. From the very start, that was our main focus, was to go to wholesale, not just do these little shows. But the shows were good for test markets to see what sold and what didn't sell, what products were going to work and what products weren't.
How do you, what's the process for you to narrow down your products? I suppose it is based on, you know, who's buying, I guess.
Yeah. So, and as you move forward, and we still do some retail shows, but a lot of it comes down to looking at your wholesale orders, what you're seeing for reorders, whether or not those products are moving quickly in a store, whether or not they're moving, you know, glacially, I guess you could say.
Yeah. One of the aspects I wanted to talk to you about is that wholesale side of things, because oftentimes I think the public thinks Made in Montana will go to trade shows like this and that's about all they do. But it's not the case. So like you said, your idea was to get into the wholesale side of things. Talk about that process. Talk about going from, you know, small business or an entrepreneur to getting in contact with larger distributors that can open doors in a lot of ways.
So it's a big commitment. And it scares a lot of people, but if you're serious about it, I almost feel like you have to go beyond what you can do. Like, you need to have good roots before you start running and trying big things. So I really recommend, like I was saying, the Yellowstone Expo is a great place to get in there and learn about it. And the people are good. You're going to see a lot of the same people that are here at that one, but you're also going to see people you won't see here because they are not Made in Montana vendors. And that's a good thing to be exposed to also, just to kind of learn and get your feet under you. Made in Montana has been good for us. So as we grew our business, we kind of started with Yellowstone Expo, which gives you really good exposure to a lot of businesses within Montana, and some larger outfits will come there as well. When you get out of Montana, and by the way, Made in Montana has a really great program for those who are going out of the state. They will reimburse some of that cost. You have to apply, and there's certain rules and regulations, but we have used that when we started going out of state, and it was very helpful for us.
And maybe we explain this to people. You know, wholesale is where you're trying to, well, maybe you could name some, but, you know, sell to Costco or sell to Albertsons or sell to Town Pump or something like that.
Yeah, so it's B2B, business to business. So it's a business selling to a business. The biggest difference there is that on the wholesale side, you won't sell one thing to one person and then never see them again. It's if you have a decent enough product, you will see resales and reorders and over and over again. So we're selling to everything from small mom and pop stores all the way up to great big, you know, huge customers. You know, I don't like to name drop too many, but for instance, we have a very, very large gift shop that we sell to in Nevada. That is an amazing account. It's our biggest account that we have.
Wow.
It's probably going to be responsible for 30% of our sales. It's a big, big account. On the other hand, you know, I mean, there's stores in Montana that it's amazing that you don't even think about. People in little towns like Broadus, you know, for instance, there's a couple of decent places there that, you know, they're small stores, but they help you keep your lights on,
yeah.
You know, and we love them. We love every one of our customers. And in a lot of cases, the smaller customers are a lot easier to deal with as far as payment goes and all this kind of thing. The bigger you get, the more you're going to get into terms and all kinds of, you know, different things. But we have a great tourism industry in Montana. It's a great place to be if you sell into that gift and souvenir market, right? And souvenirs are probably going to be a higher volume than the gift market, but everybody's business is a little bit different. Obviously, we sell gifts and souvenirs, right?
Yeah,
we don't
yeah.
sell goat's milk or anything like that. So yeah. Our business is specific around that kind of thing. We've expanded our business. You know, we originally started selling custom furniture, and we still do make custom furniture, but it's not the main focus of our business. We accidentally moved into the gift and souvenir industry as a way originally to help support the lean times between the custom furniture.
Interesting, and that's not an unusual happening for businesses.
Yeah, and as we went forward and we started moving forward with both divisions, almost, if you will, we found that this one was the one that paid the bills. So this is the one, right? Sometimes you don't see it, and as you move forward, you say, well, that worked.
How long did it take before you felt like, oh, we're starting to kind of level out here a little bit in terms of hours and production and getting it all dialed in?
I don't think that we're there yet, actually. We're still growing. If you don't grow, you can die. There's never a comfortable place in my mind that, like, where I say when I get to this number, I'm going to be happy. And business doesn't really work that way. You can't set, like, you can set a goal where you need to be that year, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's the same goal for the following. To get to that little bit more of a balance, and I still work 7 days a week, and I work at least 8 to 10 hours a day, usually 10, but as your business grows, you will start to feel like you will know when it's time to bring somebody on. You just know it. Like, you can see your business is gotten to this point that you didn't kind of, or that you didn't think you would get to, and you've outgrown whatever you were doing.
There's a lot of learning along the way there as well, and that's a pretty confident Weston Allen. Weston is W-E-S-T-I-N, Allen. Blue Wing Woodcraft, and it's just like it sounds, bluewingcraft.com for more information, too, to see the stuff. Lots of glassware, some print stuff, but does really nice with the wood products, too. And as we chatted, he talked about some distributorships that account for about 30% of his overall business, one in particular out of Nevada. So he worked hard to get to those places as well. And then, you know, I think a lot of the Made in Montana entrepreneurs share the same kind of story when it's about how many hours do you work? And it is sort of nonstop, right? You have to be super committed. And we heard that from Deb Wheaton earlier. We are rewinding our Made in Montana program. Had a chance to, well, there's a lot of people that we talked with during that Made in Montana program. And again, that's on voicesofmontana.com. The podcast is up. We were a part of it. The Montana Department of Commerce and Marta Bertolio, pardon me, the Retailer of the Year was announced and awarded and also spoke on the air. So Megan Martin of 56 Counties, that's the name of her business, 56 Counties. Congratulations once again. Also spoke with, as I mentioned, how brave I think some of our Montana women are. Michelle Kimbrough is one of those as well. She had a good story to tell about Ellie's Gourmet Barkery from Lakeside. And then also, this was from Summers, we spoke with Mike Sullivan of Longview Lavender Farms. That was on Friday. Today, we're catching up with some of the other businesses there as well. And I've seen Gary Johnson there more than once. He's been there a number of times as we have the booth there for the show. He's nearby, so he puts up with us and all that activity there for that hour. But it was great to catch up with him. Gary runs the orchard at Flathead Lake, and it's montanaorchard.com. This is a family orchard. 1976 is when Gary's parents, Ray and Carol Johnson, purchased a little piece of heaven overlooking Flathead Lake, as they say there. It originally had some 600 cherry trees, and they could produce as much as 30,000 pounds of cherries. That's a lot. But in January of 1989, temperature dropped from 60 degrees to below zero. This was a few hours' time, and I think people remember that. It really decimated the crop there. It was estimated that over 2,000 acres of cherry orchards were killed in the Flathead Valley there. So there you go. You're starting over again. As we hear Gary talk, he considers himself more of a grower than a businessman, and he's got a passion for the growing, and I appreciate that. And that leads into some of these wonderful products, and I have taken quite a few home here from the orchard at Flathead Lake, and he'll talk about them, the cherry jam, just the cherry topping, and those were all good, by the way, Gary. Let's get into this interview here again from the Made in Montana Trade Show, and pretty much a well-known, established, and a Montana business that's going to, keep within its means, so to speak, as you'll hear him talk. Gary Johnson, once again, the orchard at Flathead Lake.
First, we grow cherries. We've got about 250 cherry trees of a few different varieties of cherries, and we freeze our whole crop so that we can utilize it year-long to make the products you see over at the booth. Cherry jam, huckleberry jam, cherry rhubarb jam, cherry barbecue sauce, cherry chutney. I think we got 7 different products in all, and an apple product as well, apple butter.
I'm a huge cherry fan. I really am.
So, yeah, me too.
So 250 trees, is that a lot? I mean,
it's not a lot. There are a lot of orchards up in the valley that are only 100 trees. They get an ag break. if you have 100 cherry trees on your property taxes. 250 is small. There's a lot of orchards around the 500-600 cherry tree number. And then there's some very large orchards, 13,000 cherry trees. So we're pretty small.
Yeah. It doesn't look like you have a big crew either. I mean, tell me about the nature of, who does the work on your business?
So most of the work is managing land, like anything. You're weeding and mowing. And as far as the trees are concerned, you're doing a little pruning, in the winter. Make sure they're irrigated well. And then, the big effort really comes to crop, when it's time to harvest the crop. And we hire migrant labor. Got some great crews that come out of Yakima and do a fantastic job that have, grown up picking cherries, and they're really good at it.
Mm. Yeah. What's the secret to growing a good cherry crop?
Yeah, we don't know the answer to that. Mother Nature has her own ideas. Yeah.
But what do you have to do? I mean, how do you get your cherries? Because you say, and this is how you process them as well, taste the fruit the way it was meant to be. But you want to build the fruit, grow the fruit, so that end product is exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, like a lot of crops, they want to be irrigated well. You want to make sure you're giving them the proper nutrients that they need. That tagline really came from the fact that, like most of our fruits and vegetables these days, they're picked too early. And so when you live on an orchard and you realize that 2 weeks after everybody else has picked, that cherry tastes way better, we decided, hey, how do we share this? How do we share this with people, to give them something that, it's like if you ever grew a tomato at home, you never bought one in the store that tasted like that, we take that same approach to the cherries. Let them stay on the tree a little longer. Now, will they ship to China? Not very well. But do they make great jam? Phenomenally so.
And you freeze it. I mean, that's an interesting aspect as well. You freeze your entire crop.
Yes.
Have you always been doing that?
Yeah. We started this added value business in about 2003. Became certified organic in 2006. We started doing the Made in Montana show at that time. We may be one of the longest vendors here. I'm not sure.
I remember seeing you for a few years.
Yeah, we've been here a long time. So it's fun to be able to share that.
I think growing is a different type of small business. I mean, you invest so many hours and so much of yourself into it, but I think it's you're connected to the land and you forget about all that to a certain degree. I mean,
it's a passion, right? You need a larger economy of scale to have it be a livelihood. At least now we're paying the property taxes and get to eat some good food and get to share it with a lot of people. There's an old joke that says how you make a small fortune in the cherry business by starting with a large fortune.
I'm not laughing.
Sad but true.
Yeah, yeah. So you get into the jams then. Is it your mom's recipe, your grandma's recipe, or your partner's recipe, did you mess it up all by yourself?
A little bit of everything, mm-hmm. right? Our apple butter product is called Grandma Johnson's Apple Butter. That's my mother's recipe. Okay. She tells me it came off a 1947 bag of Sure Gel or something like that, but whatever, it's great. The cherry jam was pretty basic. We have a few other things. The Huckle Cherry was my invention. The cherry barbecue sauce was my invention. So it's just kind of come from a variety of places, people's good ideas, and then do a few samples and say, hey, I think this'll sell.
And that's another aspect, I think, that you probably enjoy. It sounds to me like you enjoy the growing, the picking. It's part of the job, I guess.
Right.
But this is also something that you're making for other people.
Yeah.
You take a little extra pride in that.
Absolutely. And, I share it with friends and family. And I have a day job, have the opportunity to interact with a lot of people. If I need to bring a special gift, it's from the orchard. It's not from the store.
And this is interesting, too, because, a lot of the businesses here, they started with a day job. Then they eventually, took the leap or whatever it was. You're looking at your 250 trees going, I know what I can do with this. So you continue your day job. The challenges then are going to be a little bit different. Probably part of it is having a day job, which is more than 40 hours a week anymore.
Yeah, true.
And still having a side business that's fun but also profitable. And then still trying to have a life. Gary.
Yeah. I think the unfortunate thing may be compared to a lot of the businesses that essentially have an unlimited resource for the product they're producing. Mother Nature might decide I don't have a resource. And so scaling can be difficult. I've engaged resources from other orchards on years where we were low. And so that's always an issue where I do have to depend a little bit. You know, like every farmer, Mother Nature has a say.
A lot of small businesses are unsuccessful after so many years because maybe they try to grow too fast, or there's a lot of reasons for that. How have you guys decided to be at this place where you're at right now in your business?
That's a really good question. I think through necessity, in a way. You know, I have no intentions of cutting the trees down. I love them. I've got to do something with them. It is more lucrative than if I just sold the cherries outright. And so it's a labor of love that, you know, I think probably will continue until I can't walk very good.
Do you think about upscaling? I mean, if people love your jam so much and they want bigger jars and whatnot, what's the temptation there?
I've entertained it. You know, sometimes it's that resource issue. You know, will I have enough? There becomes, you know, a lot of, you know, somebody like Costco or Trader Joe's, you know, hey, we want 1,000 jars, but we only want to give you $2 for our jar, right? Well, is it really worth that effort if I make the same amount of money on a smaller order at a higher price? So those equations usually come into play, and haven't really found one that I felt that upscale was worth it.
And that may change. I know you're open to those ideas,
yes,
too. What are the challenges then? I can imagine, you know, having that, you said, like you said, a full-time job as well. So labor and you know, distributing that and still keeping alive. But what are some of those challenges that you can tell us that maybe you thought you weren't going to overcome and there was a breakthrough?
I think some of the biggest hurdles were at the very beginning. Just how do you do this? And, oh, it turns out, you know, the Department of Commerce has a say in what you're doing. The Department of Ag has a say in what you're doing. Your label has to look a certain way. All these things that you never really thought about just to get it up and running. Those were the biggest hurdles. The day-to-day stuff year after year tends to be back to that Mother Nature thing that I keep bringing up. That's the biggest hurdle. There are times I stand there and watch that rain going, okay, I guess we're done this year. But you never know.
What do you feel inside when somebody tastes your cherry barbecue and goes, holy, wow, this is the best I've ever had?
Yeah, it's back to that the way the fruit was meant to taste thing. It's, I knew I grew it. I grew it in a way that I wanted it to taste the best it could be. And so, yeah, I do have pride, and I love it when someone takes a bite. And here's the funniest thing. Someone will take a bite, and they'll say, oh, this tastes like cherries. Because they were used to tasting Smucker's sugary kind of a thing instead of the actual fruit flavor. So it always cracks me up when someone says, hey, it tastes just like cherries. And it's like, yes, it does. Thank you.
It's Gary Johnson once again from the orchard at Flathead Lake. And it's MontanaOrchard.com for information on that. I've tried, the products are really good. And I'm kind of a cherry fan. Gary says he is too. And so you can just tell that there's pride and a little bit of family. A bit of family pride in that too, with his parents starting that. And there's a lot of people who help, you know, around harvest time is what they say. You need all that help, and so they have family members come in, and I know you appreciate that as a made in Montana business. So taste the fruit the way it was meant to be, Montana Orchard. That's Gary Johnson again, the orchard at Flathead Lake.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.